My name is Brittany, and I want to welcome you to the Purpose Planner Podcast. I believe that life lessons, especially traumatic ones, heavily influence how we behave in life. Your ability to see, feel, and give love are deeply connected to these experiences. I believe once you identify your wounds, you can journey into the birthplace of the self-discovery your heart's always desired. Join me for a Purpose Planner conversation now. So I'm so excited about today's topic, how childhood trauma affects your love life. And I felt it was appropriate to bring in the experts. So I have Asia Burks here with me of Transformative Mind Counseling. Hey, girl.
Hey, how you doing?
I am awesome. If you could just tell us briefly, like, why did you specialize specifically in trauma?
So, first off, I am so excited to be here because this is really my passion area. And when I originally thought about trauma, I was really thinking about my own experience of trauma. And I was just like, well, in my childhood, other than my parents divorcing, I didn't really experience a lot of trauma. But I lived in a community that experienced lots of trauma within my neighborhood, within my family, within friends. And when I was in school, after graduating, and I moved to Indiana, and I worked with kids who were right in the midst of all of the trauma that they were experiencing, my passion just kind of really grew and spurred from there. And while I enjoyed working with children, what I noticed is that we tend to continue to experience our childhood trauma as an adult. And so, and that's kind of why I focus so much on adulthood, because we tend to hold on to those things from childhood and continue to live life. And so that's why it's my passion. And I just want to help everybody.
And you were telling me earlier, you're saying you identify childhood as age what to what?
Yeah. So, we always think of like childhood as like zero, from infancy to like we're an adult, we're 18, or an adult you can drink at 21. But to me, you don't really you don't develop completely until you're like 25. And so childhood to me is from 0 to 25. So any experience that you have, and that's a long period of our life, so we could experience a whole lot within that time frame.
And that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of times people, well, I say majority of the time, people do cut off that age range to 18, sometimes even shorter, like mm-hmm. 16 mm-hmm. is when your childhood is quote unquote over with. So technically we are carrying, you know, and then we're exposed to maybe new traumas at 24, 25 mm-hmm. and we're not necessarily dealing with them.
Right. Yeah. And you know, we're just thinking that we're an adult now, it's part of our experience in our life, but that doesn't take away the moments of being a traumatic experience that we've encountered.
And so how do these traumas show up?
They show up in lots of different ways in our relationships that we have, not just romantic relationships, relationships with friends, with family members. It shows up in all of those different relationships. It shows up in the way that we're coping with things, the way that we're thinking about things, and how those thoughts can, we're seeing things as just kind of like one way or the other, mm-hmm. Or we're just kind of internalizing lots of our thoughts. So, you know, this person is mad at me, I'm a bad person. If this person is mad at me, therefore I am a bad person. Like it can come out in so many different ways. It's not just one way. Like, I'm just experiencing this with my parents, I'm experiencing this with my relationship. It can come out lots of different ways.
So for me, I think it really hit home when I got into a romantic relationship at 27. And to me, I feel like self-awareness really started for me at 27. Like, it wasn't necessarily on my radar, mm-hmm. But
once I started to be like exposed to mindfulness and just really who I am as a person, like trying to figure that out. I think somebody had asked me, like, who are you? And I was just like, that's a really good question. Like, mm-hmm. and not identifying it to what other people perceive me as.
Yeah.
When I really sat down and started to think, I was like, you know, so I think some of my traumas are like wound up in my description. Mm-hmm. I have a fear of abandonment.
Mm-hmm.
And that's from my childhood. That's from experiencing my older brother, who I was so super close with, leave, like, mm-hmm. abruptly. Mm-hmm. And not having any contact with him afterwards, and seeing him pop up periodically as I grew older, but still he would pop up and then that would be it. There would be no contact with him afterwards, even now. And in my romantic relationship, I saw that fear pop up. There mm-hmm. was this fear, because finally, like, okay, this is love. Like, I love this person. And that thought of, oh, this person could leave me. Like, this person could say, could change their mind. This mm-hmm. person could, like my brother, literally one day pack their stuff and be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know what to do if that day came.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, that day did pop up.
Mm-hmm.
And I was not equipped to handle it. It didn't flourish like a normal breakup. It didn't flourish how it did in the past. And I think maybe because for the first time, I did love another individual. But how do we become aware of our traumas so that we don't end up like me mm-hmm. trying to fix everything in the aftermath?
Mm-hmm. Being aware of our trauma experiences is kind of like thinking about just our life experiences in general. So it's like I could have experienced something, and I am navigating life differently because of this experience. And the way that I'm navigating life is in this way that I don't like. So not that I'm navigating life and I'm free and I'm happy. It's like I'm navigating life and I am still wrapped up in these moments of mm-hmm. thinking about my experiences, or I'm not flourishing in the way that I want to flourish because I'm still wrapped up in the way that I've experienced something in life.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to be very aware of not just what we experience in our history, but just how it's playing its part in our present, how it's currently showing up in our life. And when we become aware of those moments, then we get into a space of, okay, now what do I do now that I'm aware of these moments? And when you become aware of it, then it's getting into that education
piece, okay.
Learning about what you're experiencing, going to a therapist and saying, okay, this is what I know, or this is, I don't know everything, but I want to know everything. Help me through this process. I want to change it. I want to change and be this way with my, in my life.
So is it a result? Like, could people like go and Google, like, okay, I experienced divorce as a child. I experienced a loved one, which in my situation, abruptly leaving, mm-hmm. or I experienced the death of a mom or dad. Like, mm-hmm. so could they go and Google to kind of get like a, I guess like a rough draft of what mm-hmm. they should start exploring before they go to the therapist?
So you can go to Google, but you just got to be careful what you find on Google, because not everything is going to be correct. So if you go to Google, you want to make sure that the source is an actual appropriate source to be finding information on. So because sometimes people just write stuff to just be writing stuff and it's all wrong.
That's true.
You want to make sure that it's an appropriate source.
Gotcha. So like Psychology Today,
right? Okay. Yeah. And there are some blogs out there that have written things about different parts of trauma or different experiences in life, but they've written it and the person, and I'm dating other people, then you might not want to touch on that. But if you're like, okay, I'm committing to this person, this is the person I'm going to spend some time with, and really, I really want to get to know, then yeah, you can explore that. But explore it from a sense of, this is my experience. can you tell me something more about your experience so that that person can do their own self-check and self-awareness and kind of look and see, like, this is, maybe they are aware of it, maybe they're not, but it's important. And if you have a partner who is has a really good attachment, then you will have someone who will be there to support you through that process. So let's say that I have an anxious attachment style.
So wait, okay, everybody listening. Okay, because this is like, this is one of my favorite finds. And I actually found this on Google. So, you know, Google. Well, no, on Psychology Today, I found this. Attachment styles. Mm-hmm. I was completely unaware of what it was. Yeah. You know, I never explored it. Mm-hmm. But once I read it, I had an Oprah aha moment. I was like, this makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. This yeah. is why
yeah.
this relationship didn't work out. Or this is why this one was perfect. And I ruined it because my attachment style is a mix of secure and anxious. So mm-hmm. for all of you listening that don't know, can you briefly, Asia, go through the different attachment styles individuals can have?
Yeah, so there are actually a lot of different attachment styles out there. So I will try, I'll do the common ones. So there are individuals who have more of a anxious attachment, or and then there are individuals who have an avoidant attachment, or a insecure attachment, or an insecure avoidant attachment.
Oh, geez.
So that's what it gets a little, complex.
Yeah, but I saw secure, anxious, and avoidant. Those were mm-hmm. the main three. Mm-hmm. Cause like I eventually got off of Psychology Today and I just Googled it all. So, but those were the main yeah. three that popped up. Mm-hmm.
Someone else, like someone could also have a dismissive avoidant attachment as well. So, but when it comes to these different styles of attachment, it's all based in our experiences from childhood. And when we, and the research that is from attachment is, there's a whole lot of research that comes from experiences in childhood. But, you know, we just grow up and become adults. And if we weren't aware of these moments or always experienced the same type of experiences from our parents, then how would we know of anything different of like mm-hmm. a secure attachment? And there's also individuals who have a secure attachment as well. So
let's just go over those three. What yeah. does a secure attachment look like? What does an avoidant attachment look like? And then mm-hmm. what does an anxious attachment look like?
So a secure attachment is someone who from their childhood or maybe with their parents have experienced moments of connection with them where they're able to be vulnerable even as a child, and that vulnerability was met with comfort, with care, with understanding, and empowerment in some way. So kind of like being able to feel and understand and be able to move through that space.
So were these parents or guardians, they were just mm-hmm. more aware emotionally of what their child needed?
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. What the needs are, what was necessary for them and for that child at that time.
Okay.
Yeah. Someone who experienced, let's say, have an avoidant attachment, they may have parents who were very dismissive to their needs or dismissive to their feelings, mm-hmm. Told them to, or don't really have a close relationship with their family or with the parent or their guardian.
Okay.
And so it's easier to be away from people to just deal with my own thing because I'm not getting that from my parents, my guardian mm-hmm. people. And then the other one, anxious, could be the moments that that have been placed on me I may have had this experience of being a child and being vulnerable in this moment, and my parents are, or guardian is more telling me I shouldn't be this way, I shouldn't be doing this, and so I'm or if you do this, and you start to feel very guilty and things like that based off of that interaction that you had. And so that get you more of this pull away mm-hmm. or this, I don't know how I'm supposed
to feel,
right? Okay. How am I supposed to respond? Because I shouldn't be this way, but I am this way, mm-hmm. right? So, so from those three, I mean, and there's different styles and different types within those three, but, secure is, you know, the secure attachment, but they all had its place at that time in our life, based off even from our parents, that could also be their experience mm-hmm. that they had. So right. they're doing what they know.
Right.
And that just kind of, and then it just moved into, I'm doing what I knew to do.
So let's say you're not casually dating. You are mm-hmm. literally dating somebody that you see a future with. You're mm-hmm. building, there's love there. And I know in those scenarios, in this day and age, we constantly ask, what's your love language? Mm-hmm. You know, that's mm-hmm. a very common question. You know, yeah. me and my girlfriends talk about that all the time. Like, I asked him and he said he likes gifts and he likes acts of service, you mm-hmm. know. So we know, I feel like our culture knows the love languages like the back of our hand.
Yeah.
But as far as attachment styles, how mm-hmm. how important is that to ask your significant other? Especially in like maybe the earlier stages.
So, it's important in a sense, but I think it's okay to still ask about love languages because mm-hmm. it's still what they think that they need mm-hmm. or it is what they need.
Right.
But the way that we show that may be very differently. So let's say, my love language is, acts of service, then what does that acts of service actually look like for my partner? Because my acts of service could be very different than when my partner says their acts of service is, right? So it's important to have that conversation. And then you want to just be aware. So if I have a partner and they are aware of their attachment style and it's anxious, and I keep saying anxious probably because I think it's my
honestly, that is, I took a test and that is mine. I'm a mix between secure and anxious. Mm-hmm. I tested for both, mm-hmm. but more so anxious. So I'm working on it.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so, you know, your partner may need moments of just, so let's say physical touch, even though they're anxious, attachment style and physical touch is what is important to them, then even just like a tap on the shoulder or just, you know, things like that, or just like a back rub or whatever the case is as you're walking by, like those moments are important to them, and that secure, it gets them to closer to a secure attachment within that relationship.
Okay.
But sometimes people are not aware of those moments.
I was gonna say, what if they're avoidant? What if, because it seems like to me, avoidant, which is what I've ran into consistently. Mm-hmm. I'm still single, but I've dated. I've dated. And it seems like I keep running into men who have the avoidant attachment style. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I do learn their love languages, and then I try to act upon the love language, which surprisingly have all been different from mine. Like, mm-hmm. mine is quality time. Mm-hmm. So say you get one and it's acts of service. So yeah. you try to uphold, you know, what their top love language is, but they're avoidant. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not really going together mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. they want to push you away when you want to service them mm-hmm. in really what they need.
Yeah.
Like, how do you manage that push and pull? Because yeah. that really doesn't go together.
Mm-hmm. And, It's really being aware of ourselves and being aware of, so let's say I'm with someone who's avoidant and I'm already identified that I'm anxious, and knowing that they're in this space where they need their space, and it's okay that they need their space. Mm. And we have to be aware that my own anxiety or my anxiousness within that is not connected to my relationship. It's connected to my own experience of it. So
that's good. That's a moment to write down. That's really good.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, cause that's, so they need, if they need their space, they need their space. It doesn't mean that they're going anywhere. So we have to
what if they present it in a way as if they are going somewhere, like they want to take a break from the relationship or they can no longer move forward in the relationship. Mm-hmm. Like, is it appropriate to say, hey, your attachment style is like ringing red bells right now? Or do you just let that person?
So, so when it comes to, so let's say that that person is saying, okay, I want a break, I want that. Maybe that is what they feel that they need. And are we as an anxious person attaching to them, trying strongly to attach them because they're leaving? Or are they actually like, what is a break? So it's like being aware of our own anxieties that are connected to it and saying, okay, well, what does that actually mean? What does a break mean? Are we breaking up and not having any contact, or are you saying that you need like a week off? Like, what does this mean? We need to have some clear understanding and communication as to what's going on. Is it, when we start to internalize it and say, oh, it's me, I did something wrong, I need to do this, I need to go in more for the kill with someone who has that attachment style, it's not going to make it better for them. They're just going to push away harder.
That makes sense. And honestly, I feel like that's the perfect scenario when you can just really communicate with the individual and, you know, be vulnerable and transparent. But 9 times out of 10, that's not always the scenario, especially when you're just in that dating phase. Like, you're not married. So how would you suggest people kind of overcome, you know, a situation where communication isn't as strong? Like, would you recommend them both going to a therapist together, or is it just like, just let it go?
Yeah, so if it's a committed relationship and this is something that both parties are saying, I want this person at the end of the day and I want to continue to work on this relationship, then yeah, we can go to a counselor, we can talk about this, we can look in at our own self-awareness of our own way that we do things and how we communicate with each other. That would be an important part of that. And then doing the steps and doing the things together to say, okay, I know that this is your style and this is how I'm going to support you in it. And I know that this is your style, so I'm going to support you in yours. But if we're already like, nope, I'm not even sure about it. I don't even know if that's really what I want. Then it's really figuring out, okay, well, if it's not really what I want, what am I attaching to?
And then see, that's the, especially with avoidance, I'm getting stuck on them. Sorry if I'm calling you out. I feel like they're the ones that are the most apprehensive about the relationship to begin with. Mm-hmm. It's stemming from their childhood. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you're coming in as an empathetic person, I mean, you just rally up a ton of patience. Mm-hmm. And you really want to help this person because you kind of see that they're in their own way. But it's only so much you can do, especially, again, in just the dating aspect of it. But you really want to help this person. Like, you really want to help the avoidant not be avoidant of really what they ultimately need. They're running away from something they really desire to have, and that's intimacy and love and a relationship. Mm-hmm. But
yeah, so it's like, am I doing this from what type of relationship am I doing this from? Am I doing this from a romantic standpoint? Because if I'm doing that from a romantic standpoint, then I have to be aware that maybe that person is not where they are in their awareness of things. Mm. If they're not aware of it, then they're not going to want to make the changes of it.
That's true.
If they're still comfortable in the way that they're doing things, then what would be the purpose of or point of changing? If they got to a point where they're like, I notice in my life all of my intimacy issues or all of my experiences in my relationship are connected to XYZ, or I haven't been fulfilled or sufficient in some way, then that person is doing that work inside to figure out, okay, something's not up. But if they're not there, then they're not there, and you can't force someone to be there.
That's good. And that actually segues into, is there a way to start paying attention? So as much as you need to be aware of yourself and what your attachment style is and, you know, how your trauma is you know, affecting the relationship. How can someone become aware of their partner's triggers?
Yeah.
It's like, so like an avoidant and anxious style, they definitely have triggers.
Mm-hmm.
But just in general, everybody's childhood experiences, someone may have experienced a divorce, someone may have experienced the death of a parent. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you pay attention to your partner's triggers?
Pay attention to how they respond to things. So if I did something a certain way and they responded very strongly to it,
mm-hmm.
then I'm aware of it, but then I still need to have that conversation with my partner about it. I can't just hold it in my back pocket and think, because then it's all in my head, right?
So
I still need to have that conversation with my partner and say, you know, I noticed that in my own actions, I did this, and it feels like it turned you off in some way, or you responded in some certain way. Can we, you know, like, what happened? And just being in a space, not arguing, just really just want to talk and just say, like, what, I'm just trying to figure out what happened. They may be aware of it. They may not be aware of it.
And it's so interesting that you say that. A lot of times I'm noticing that people will mix arguing and trying to find an understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they'll get the two confused.
Mm-hmm.
And is it important in that instance, when you know you're just trying to get an understanding, to maybe emphasize repeatedly, like, hey, no, we're not arguing. Mm-hmm. We are just here to both understand what's going on so we can move forward.
Mm-hmm. So part of it is going to be making sure that both parties are in a space where they're calm, happy, ready and willing to have a conversation.
Okay.
Because if someone becomes defensive in some way, then they're not ready for that conversation, or that just may be their style. That's how they know to do things. They're saying, okay, you know, I think this is an important part of, I feel that this is an important part of our relationship that we need to have a conversation on. Let's say you're working with someone who's avoidant, say, I am willing to give you the time to say when you're ready to have that conversation.
That's
and
good.
Not force on them to have the conversation.
Anxious attachment styles, we definitely are like, no, let's have this conversation
we need to have it now.
And figure this out.
I don't
out
care
now.
What you're doing. You get off that video game.
Right.
You get off that phone. You get
stop watching football. Like, this is more important. We need to figure this out right now.
You're shopping. I don't care. We're going to talk about it.
That is so true. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. But also know that when you're having that conversation, to say, I want to still have this conversation. So it's never that we're never going to have the conversation. It's just that I want to give some space so that you feel comfortable to have it. Just know that there's going to be a time where I'm going to ask again, because I don't want it to just drop off the face of the earth. I really want us to have a conversation about it.
Right. And then I guess in the scenario of it, like, when both partners are aware, okay, this is my trauma, this is my attachment style, you know, I'm working on my anxious style, you're working on your avoidant, is it appropriate to bring in professional help? Like, even if it's, you've only been date, like, is there a time stamp on it? Like, say you've only been dating for 6 months, like,
mm-mm.
Should you not bring it in the therapist, or should you guys both go to couple therapy?
I was shaking my head. Yeah. there's no time. There isn't a time frame if both parties are ready and wanting to do it. Most people think about couples counseling and they think about it when there's an issue,
mm-hmm.
and it's bad and you're already out the door halfway, right?
So listen, I know what you're getting at because I was just telling a girlfriend, you know, my listeners know I'm not married yet, I'm not in a relationship yet, y'all will be the first to know. But I always thought, you know, how awesome would it be to go into therapy before there's even an issue?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I haven't found that partner yet, but I'm like, just once we know we're committed, I would just love to just initially start, you mm-hmm. know, learning each other for purposes of a better communication, you know, style and
mm-hmm.
better understanding of one another, mm-hmm. and, you know, there's only so much we would both be able to do without a professional therapist, you know, interceding.
So, absolutely. You don't have, it doesn't, it can be 6 months into the relationship and you're saying, okay, I see something within this person and I want to be with this person. And that person and the partner is saying, yeah, I see the same. And so let's figure this out. And I'm willing and willing to do it. It's completely fine to go. And the therapist will be there to, they're not, of course, they're not part of your relationship, but they're going to help with that communication because they don't want to be part. They don't want to be a part of that. They don't want to be a third party. They just want you to be able to communicate with each other in the way that you feel is appropriate so that you don't fall into your norms of behavior, be it anxious or be it avoidant or be it secure. You know, I mean, you want to fall into secure.
So you just said something that made me think the norms of what you're used to. So because we're used to being a certain attachment style, you know, we've been that way from our entire childhood, 0 to 25. That means that we do need to have what I think I'm hearing you say is that we do need to have awareness to constantly work on not falling back into it every single day.
Yeah, because I mean, if you think about it, your brain remembers everything. Even though you don't remember it, your brain remembers it. So it had its place, it had its purpose in that point in time in life. So you found your style, you found your way to cope, and you used it because it was good at that time.
Right.
And so our body knows, it's used to it. Just like riding, like you can ride a bike. You cannot ride it for like 10 years and ride it again. Like
that's true. That's
your
true.
Body just remembers. And so it's being mindful of just being aware of these moments of like, I know it's easy for me to slide right back into being anxious in that way or in regards to my attachment. Or I know it's very easy for me to slide back into getting away and just saying, I don't want to talk about it. I don't need it. I don't want no parts of it. I don't need to cry. I don't need to do this. It's very easy for us to slide into it. So very important to be aware of these moments when we notice our behavior is going a certain way or our thoughts are going a certain way.
So it's very interesting because when people associate healing, they think that potentially the trauma's gone. The negative experience won't affect them anymore because they're healed from it. But again, what it sounds like you're saying is it's going to require work.
Yes.
Like you can't just say, like say you've gone to 20 sessions with your therapist and you're great now, you're aware, and then that's it. You're healed and then you don't put any more work into it. That's not how this works.
Right, exactly.
So how does healing work?
So it's, you might not be experiencing it in the exact same way that you experienced it before.
Okay.
So you may be healed in that way because I'm not coping the way that I used to, but I'm still experiencing other aspects of my life. So now I'm seeing it in a different way of my life, or, you know, coming around in a different way in my life. So now I'm working on that piece. And then eventually you heal from that and you continue to move forward. And eventually, yes, you get to a space where you feel like, okay, I'm experiencing life the way that I want to experience life. And that is when you identify the way that you want to experience life, that's the healing part.
That's good. You guys should write that down. Because, I think that's a question that we don't necessarily ask. How do you want to experience life?
Yeah. And then what does that really look like? Like, oh, I just want to wake up every morning and feel stupid happy every single day. And, you know, like, okay, so what does that mean?
Right.
Like, what does that really mean? So it's like really going through that process and really understanding it. And sometimes we have to do that while we're doing it on our own. And we need to do it on our own. But we also may need to see someone, a counselor or a therapist, to kind of help with that process too, because maybe I don't know what it looks like or I've never experienced it in life, and so but this is so I don't even know how to formulate it. But you can have that process or look into other pieces to kind of develop that for yourself.
This is good. This is so good that we're gonna have to do a part two because we have not even t- touched on everything yet that kind of formulates into how our traumas are affecting our love life. So, Asia, thank you for...
Yes, thanks for having me.
You know, just being open and helping us all, especially all the single folks. But, I mean, I'm sure this is stuff that married people can use as well.
Absolutely. You don't get married and because you've resolved all of your issues. You bring your issues with you, so.
That's true. So we will continue this conversation in a part two. I think we're going to have to dive a little bit deeper.
Sounds good to me. I'm ready to dive.
I am. This was so great.
You've been listening to the Purpose Planner Podcast. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe, review, and rate this podcast. You can follow us on Instagram under Purpose Planner, and I cannot wait to have another purposeful conversation with you next week.